This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Denise and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Wednesdays with Denise on the Newsmakers program. I am Denise Quinn. Dave is at the fair. He is still, he's probably on his way. He's been doing a remote out there, out in the hot, hot sun. It was incredibly hot when I came over here today, which I'm not liking, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be going away soon, I hope. I'm also here with Hunter, who's running the board for me. Hey, Hunter.
Hey, Denise.
It's good to see you.
Long time since we've been on the air together.
I know. It's nice. So, again, yeah, this is Wednesdays with Denise, and we have a great guest today. In the third chair is HD 23 representative Mike Nierman, and he is also, we're going to be talking about his new role, which is as the Oregon Director of the Freedom Foundation. So Mike, welcome to the program.
Good. Thanks for having me on, Denise.
It's great to have you. So, we just recently, I think you're newly in this position. You are the Oregon Director of the Freedom Foundation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be involved. So, yeah.
So tell me now, this is a job. This is your day job?
So this is an actual job. Yeah. I actually have to show up to work, and I actually get paid and everything. So, yeah, I show up at the office every day and work there.
Do you have to wear a suit and tie?
I do have to wear a tie because part of my position is to do fundraising. And so if people are willing to give me money, I'm willing to put on some neckwear for them. So, yeah.
So now do you keep your HD 23 seat? Do you do both? Can you do both?
Yeah. So I kind of work that out with the Freedom Foundation. Uh-huh. And obviously during the session and there's other things, ledge days and other things that are going to slow me down there, and they're okay with that, and so I'll work with that and juggle both and make it work.
So there's no conflict of interest or anything like that. I mean, you know, I would think what the Freedom Foundation does, we'll talk a little bit about that, but that they should go hand in glove together, I would think.
Yeah, I don't think there's any kind of conflict of interest. It's a workers' rights organization. It's a civil rights organization. Mm-hmm. Other legislators work for worker rights organizations.
Yeah.
They represent workers in unions, and I represent workers in other ways. So I think that I don't really feel like there's a conflict of interest.
So for those listeners who are not familiar with the Freedom Foundation, can you talk a little bit about, first of all, give us some history. What is the Freedom Foundation?
Yeah, so it has kind of an interesting history, Denise. So the Freedom Foundation was actually founded back in the 1990s, and it was kind of a think tank. And so they produced white papers and everything. And about 10 years ago, they decided, and this was in the state of Washington,
yeah.
10 years ago, they decided we need to be more effective. And so they kind of took up the mantle of doing protecting workers' rights. And so they, with the court case of Harris versus Quinn, mm-hmm. which said that Medicaid money couldn't be automatically deducted from workers' paychecks, they started letting workers know of their rights to opt out of their unions there. And then since then, we had almost a year ago, or a little bit over a year ago, yep. we had Janus versus AFSCME.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we go door to door and do mail and carrier pigeon and whatever we can do to let workers know that they don't have to pay dues to a union to keep their job.
I've seen billboards and things like that, too. I know mm-hmm. I had been a member of a union back in the day when I worked for the school district.
Darn.
And I remember learning about Beck rights and fair share and all of those kind of things. And I remember how difficult it was to get that kind of information out of my union rep, because I did not want to be a part of that, because even back then, this was back in the, you know, the early aughts.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the way the politics was going. I didn't align with that union's politics. And frankly, most public sector union politics I don't align with. So I didn't want my dues money going to fund candidates that I absolutely disagree with. So when I tried to initiate that process, this is before Freedom Foundation really came down here.
Yeah.
I was kind of stonewalled. It was stalled. My emails didn't get answered. I finally got some resolution, but then I ended up quitting. And so I was going to a new job. So I have to imagine that the Freedom Foundation now fills that role, letting people who weren't aware of it like I wasn't at the time. Is that a lot of what you guys do,
right.
is just information?
You're exactly right. The unions, they have an interest in not letting you know that, because they lose membership and they lose money. And now, so you mentioned Beck rights, and mm-hmm. that refers to a Supreme Court case, mm-hmm. Communication Worker of America versus Beck, mm-hmm. which is now an obsolete case. So Janus has
made that moot.
Made that moot, and as well as even, I think he used the term fair share.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as fair share anymore. You don't have to be a member of your union. So the fair share was when you were required to be a member of the union, you got the fair share portion of your dues back. So yeah, that's what we're doing and whatever. It came to Oregon in 2015 and I'm the third Oregon director. So
I remember Anne Marie Gurney back in the day. We had her on the show quite often and to talk about that and to give us updates. So what specifically, you know, what in your new role, what are you doing? And then specifically, what does the Oregon Freedom Foundation do?
So specifically what we do, most of what we do is we kind of have a two-pronged approach. One of them is we go door to door and we tell people what their rights are as far as our union goes. And we have mail that accompanies that and everything. The other thing that we do is we have a team of lawyers on staff and we litigate when we need to. And so we can back up union members. Some people try to opt out of their unions and the unions are sometimes putting obstacles in their way.
Yeah.
And so we sic the lawyers on them when that happens. The other thing that we do is the unions take advantage of the legal situation a lot of times. And so we litigate. We will take them into court and do things. So we have some of that kind of planned coming up. We have some of that going on right now. One of them is the unions have a kind of a tactic that they have for keeping people in is they say, well, there's an opt out window. And then
is it like 2 hours?
Probably. but you laugh, but it's kind of the way they treat it.
Uh-huh.
There's an opt out window. And by the way, we can't tell you when it is.
Has
to do with the date that you joined. And by the way, we're not going to tell you what that date was and all this. So they whatever. And so we have some support with that legally. We'll do demand letters to them. But also we have litigation based on just the legality of opt out windows.
Mm-hmm.
So opt out windows shouldn't be permitted under Janus. And there's not really any good reason for them.
Shouldn't you have to opt in?
Yeah, you're right. That's the point, right?
But I don't want to automatically be assumed that I want to be a member of a union with this new job.
Right.
Has it changed where it used to be you had to join the union in order to keep your employment for certain positions?
Yeah, right.
So that's still the same, or is that gone now?
No, that's gone.
Okay.
You don't have to be a union member.
That's really kind of obliterated the whole thing.
Yep, right. Yeah. And you can't be compelled to pay dues. So before you didn't have to be a member, but you could be compelled to pay dues. That's what fair share means.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm wondering, I mean, do you have, I'm assuming you're collecting data as far as what the numbers look like. I've seen some, you know, some different things about the unions are tending to lose money, but the unions are going to spin it that everything's fine. Yeah. Everything's just fine. But do you know what the actual situation is? What's your data?
Yeah, so just post Janus, with SEIU 503, for instance, and that's been one of the locals that we've been focused on, at least in Oregon, and we have 26% of their membership has opted out.
Wow.
So that's a quarter of their budget that's been cut.
Do we have an idea what does that mean in dollars and cents?
Yeah, so that's it's like $15 million, that's $15 million per year.
Wow.
And so that's the gift that keeps on giving.
So I'm imagining they're stepping up their attacks.
Yep.
And I've seen some things out there, some not so flattering pictures of you, which is always seems to be the case. Let's find the one where you're blinking, taking a bite of something.
Oh, yeah.
So it sounds like you guys are effective. As we go forward, we're coming in the new school year starting. I'm thinking about, school districts, most of them are unionized. Do you have any plans?
As a matter of fact, we've spent all summer long doing a specific project just with the OEA, and it's kind of exciting. The thinking is that teachers are more accessible during the summer, and it was a population that we hadn't tried to crack before. So so we've been just focusing on doing outreach to OEA members or teacher union members, and we've had some success with that, but we need some pencil sharpening on that, so we'll continually be working on that. But that's the kind of thing that we have to do. You know, the way it kind of works is when you first do it, you could send out a bunch of mail and you get all the low-hanging fruit of people that were maybe like you were saying,
who wanted out,
who kind of want out and didn't really know how or whatever. And so you get a lot of that, and then after a while the mail ceases to be kind of effective. You kind of got all that low-hanging fruit, and then you start knocking the doors or the billboards or things like that. So, and we continually have to try to keep being creative on how we're going to do that. One of the ideas that we had that was actually given to us by one of our donors was do outreach to certain populations in Spanish. So we'll be looking at doing that too. So
what Who is your typical door knocker for the Freedom Foundation? Do you hire people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we hire people. And if anybody wants to thinks they might be interested in that, they should contact the Freedom Foundation. If you just go to our website, freedomfoundation.com, and look up the contact information, and we'd be happy to take a look at them. But, you know, we have the cool thing about door knocking is that you can kind of set your own hours, mm-hmm. and you can kind of do it at your own pace. And it's a very flexible work arrangement there. So we have, as you might imagine, we have some people that are maybe a little bit more kind of seasoned citizens mm-hmm. that do it mm-hmm. Because they like the flexibility, and it's a little bit more pay for them. And then kind of on the other end of the spectrum, we have some younger people who are kind of college students looking for extra income that they can work around their school schedule or whatever. So it really, it's really a exciting opportunity for employment. It's not all that hard. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, door knocking is a lot of walking, but it's mostly driving. So yeah. they have to have a car to do it. And it's a really effective way to do that. And it's I think it's great work. And if somebody's a believer in our cause, it makes it even better.
Yeah, I would imagine people would be grateful to get the information, but I would imagine also too, you might be met with some hostility from someone who isn't so interested.
Sure, but like anything else, you know, I don't know, like you and me, we're kind of political junkies or whatever. and then there's the people on the other side of the spectrum there. Yeah. But you know, 80% of society is just Joe Sixpack
doesn't
and Jane Soccer
and
Mom.
Doesn't care.
Yeah, or they kind of pay attention, but they're just grateful for the information.
Yeah.
And so they don't always make a decision at the doorstep there, but it's effective to talk to people. When we talk to people at the door, we're about 40% effective. So it's
wow.
so it's a pretty high rate if we actually can talk face to face with someone.
Wow, that's actually mm-hmm. a very high rate.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit more. I think we need to take a quick break here. So what I'm going to do is when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about if someone's listening to this and they want to opt out, they're not happy with being a member of the union, what the process is for that. But in the meantime, before we do that, we are going to take a quick break. You are listening to Wednesdays with Denise on KYKN's Newsmakers on 1430. KYKN Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers proudly brought to you by our friends at Color Tile of Salem.
It's Dave. He's back.
Yes, thank you so much. It's a little warm out there.
Looking a little flush there, like it's yeah. a little skosh warm out
I
there.
I had air conditioning on max on the way back back here. Didn't help very much.
Well, we have been talking to our guest, HD 23 representative and new Oregon director of the Freedom Foundation, Mike Nierman. So we're going to pick up where we left off, Dave, so you can chime in anytime.
I was actually listening very
Excellent.
Closely, learning all kinds of things from Mr. Nierman.
Well, one of the things we want to talk about and let people know is how if they are a member of a union and they're not happy, and we're talking public sector unions here. Mm-hmm. Let's make that distinction.
Right,
this is
yeah.
public sector unions. So this is, you know, you work for the state, you work for the school district. Private sector unions are a different cat. So if somebody is listening, they were like me, they don't want to be, they don't like where their money is going, what can they do to opt out? How can you and the Freedom Foundation help them do that?
Good. So we'll do all the heavy lifting on that. So if they just go to optouttoday.com, so optout.com, today.com, and we'll do all the heavy lifting. There's a little form to fill out there, and they can print it out themselves. They can give it to us. Mm-hmm. We'll print it out. We'll send it certified mail and get their union to do that. And
okay.
then we'll contact them after they should have been notified that they were opt out or should see that reflected in their paycheck. And
okay.
if that doesn't happen, we got lawyers with their arms folded across their chest ready to go and make sure that it does happen.
So the heavy lifting then mm-hmm. is that awkward conversation that I kept trying to have personally by myself with the union representative and all that I kept getting stonewalled. You guys, someone doesn't have to do that now.
No, if you just hit our website and fill out that form, and we'll do the rest there. So we'll make sure that it happens.
Well, that's worth the price of admission right there.
Yep.
Because that's not comfortable.
Yeah. That's the thing. You always get your money's worth when you go to that website too, because it doesn't cost anything.
Exactly.
So
boom, bada bing.
So it's a great service that we provide, and so we're standing by, ready to do do that. If somebody has any questions, they can go to that website too and call our office, and we'll answer any questions there. The cool thing about it is it puts money back in your pocket.
Yeah.
As a public employee, the union dues are anywhere between $500 to $1,000 a year, or even more. And that's money that can go to you. You know, that's money that you can use yourself if you're not happy with the way that your union uses it. And so you're still covered under the union contract. You still get the union benefits and everything.
Okay, I'm glad you made that distinction, because there's some people thinking that because you don't do that, that you lose out on those, I'm throwing up air quotes, on benefits, because that's some people think that's a benefit or not. But so you don't. You still are a member of the union. You just...
Well, you're not a member of the union, but you're still covered,
by the union contract.
Right, exactly.
The bargain contract.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, switching gears just a little bit. Earlier this year, we passed HB 2016, which is something that the public employees wanted. Can you talk a little bit about what the implications of that are?
Yeah. So that bill is a pretty dark moment in the last legislative session there. So that was the public employees trying to codify in law some of the stuff that they kind of get in benefits, and some of it's kind of disturbing. The worst part of it is when they have public employees. These are people that are paid for by our tax dollars, and they get paid time to do work for the union, and that should be a little bit disturbing to anybody who's a taxpayer. That because we don't have public employees washing my car or babysitting my cat, although I understand in the Kitzhaber administration some of that went on, but that's not really right. And so they've put that into law that they get the right to do that, and we wouldn't tolerate that going on for any other third party kind of thing. Like if somebody was a car dealer and got elected to the legislature, you wouldn't say, oh, I can have my staff go down and sell cars or something like that. But it's pretty pernicious there that they're doing this, and they can even do political activities during that time. So it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
There was recently a court case in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it was in state court, so it doesn't have any applicability in Oregon, but it's kind of a harbinger of things to come, that where they said they struck down the ability to do that. So it's a direction that we need to go here in Oregon, and we'll be looking at that.
If I correct me if I'm wrong, was this also the one where they would be finding out email addresses and personal information about people to use it to promote the union? Or?
Right. So it's the same thing. It was in the same bill there.
Yeah.
But so all kinds of things. So like, for instance, if I work for the state, my state email address isn't really my property.
Right.
So that if that becomes public information, that's fine.
Yeah.
But things like your personal cell phone or anything like that, that's, you know, I pay for that phone if I'm a state worker, and that shouldn't be given out to anybody. And this bill was trying to make it possible to do that. And so that's not really right either. And again, they don't share that information with organizations like the Freedom Foundation, but other organizations that are not the state, like the public employee unions, get access to that. So it's not really a fair shake there.
That seems like an absolute violation of privacy.
A violation of privacy, but also a violation of kind of equal access, just equal protection of the laws should apply to everything.
So does Freedom Foundation get the same access to all this information that the unions are getting based on this?
No, and as a matter of fact, we kind of get very little. We depend heavily on doing public records requests of who is a public employee, and then we don't get any kind of information, additional information on that stuff that would make our work easier. So, that's...
interesting.
That's a problem.
It doesn't seem very fair now, does it?
That's a word that gets tossed around by my friends in the unions a lot. Fair, right?
So, right?
Yeah, they say it's not fair. Yeah. We need this. Yeah. We need that.
So they're getting a little bit of the not fair back from me then.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm glad. I'm glad that you're in this new role. I think it's going to be interesting. I think it's a good fit, certainly.
Yeah, I think so too.
So
yeah.
you're about a month into your new role now.
Yep. I've been working there about a month.
Do you have any, you know, as the Oregon director? I mean, you know the lay of the land in Oregon. Any goals and things that you want to accomplish coming up here in the near future?
Yeah. So short term, to go back to that House Bill 2016, there's some specific items on there that we need to litigate, and so we're kind of working on our strategy to do that. I hope I'm not letting too much of the cat out of the bag right now.
But,
But I think whatever we're doing is kind of expected. And then, and again, I kind of alluded to this of, so you, when you start to work, so we've been working in Oregon since 2015.
Yeah.
When you start, you get kind of low hanging fruit and it's kind of easy pickings. So the mail and everything like that. And then, so we need to get creative on how we can, get at more people, get access to more people, get the message out better or whatever, and get it out more specifically to specific groups. So we have all kinds of things planned to kind of do that.
Oh, good. But you can't talk. Are they super, super duper secret?
I think some of them are kind of half baked. So whatever. So, but we're working that direction.
Well, I know you've had fundraisers in the past. Mm-hmm. I've been to a couple of dinners. There was a couple of big, you know, kind of high ticket, big high profile that I remember having my picture taken of people as I was walking in to sort of out me as someone who had the gall to support the Freedom Foundation.
Yeah,
and it felt like walking down sort of a paparazzi line, which was kind of strange.
Yeah.
It just seems to me, you know, the metric of wanting to just shut down any dissent tells me a lot about how confident that they maybe are in their message reaching people. And the fact that you said, what was it, 26% had opted out initially. I mean, I think a lot of people, once they see what's going on, aren't really all that thrilled with it.
Yeah. And even you don't even have to see what's going on to not be thrilled with it. You can just say, I'd rather have $1,000 in my own pocket.
Give yourself a raise.
Right. Give yourself a raise. So I'm glad you brought up the fundraising events. So we have one coming up in November. I don't think we quite have it up on our website yet.
Okay.
So you might wait a couple of weeks and come back. But I'm pleased to announce that the speaker is going to be Arkansas Governor, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
Excellent.
So yeah, I told him to bring his daughter along, but
he probably gets that a lot.
Yeah,
I think
sure
he does.
But so I think it's just going to be him. But anyway, we're going to have loads of fun. So I hope everybody can make it. And if you're interested in tickets, then you can email me mneerman@freedomfoundation.com. And I'll get you set up. So.
Awesome. It sounds like a lot of exciting stuff that's coming on. So we're going to take another quick break. Mike is staying with us through the whole hour, so we have so much more to talk about. But right now, you are listening to Wednesdays with Denise on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Now, back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires, and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions, in the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Sylvan Learning Center.
We are back with Representative Mike Neerman, who is the new Oregon Director of the Freedom Foundation, and we are going to segue into Oregon Republican politics. There's a subject for you.
Wide open.
Being a Republican in Oregon is a interesting experience. Both Mike and I were over in Pendleton this last past weekend because it was the Oregon Platform Convention, which happens in odd years, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, odd years. So, you know, I've done two prior to this where I was actually a delegate. This year I was a little more behind the scenes. I was a bonus alternate delegate. So I got to sell some swag and kind of hang out.
That's a fancy
title. There's nothing to it, really.
Okay.
Basically, would pop in. If somebody had to leave, I would pop in. I got to make a couple votes, which was good. And I got to sell swag and kind of float around. And for me, it was kind of nice because I got to see a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time. And that I love that. But, I mean, we're really there for a really important. We're coming up with our Republican Party platform. So, Mike, you want to talk a little bit? I mean, you were there. You were there in your role more as an elected official.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that's interesting about the platform convention is everybody who's a Republican nominee for state legislative office is automatically gets a seat at the platform convention.
And you're a nominee.
So, yeah. And so when I would identify myself, I would identify myself as the nominee for the Republican nominee for House District 23. So I'm not there because I'm a state representative. I'm there because I was the nominee.
Because you're a nominee. So what was your role then? I mean, what did you have to do when you were there?
So I didn't actually join any of the planks there. So I used it as an opportunity to work with Representative Post to do candidate recruiting. So worked on some of that.
Prime ground for that.
Yeah. So, so not only the people that were there, but then we went over some lists of some other people statewide, whatever. So we're looking at some names there. So anybody who's interested in running for state legislature, give me a call.
You're the guy. You're the guy to call.
I'll get you set up. So,
well, I was there I floated around. I picked two that really had personal interest for me. The first one was emergency preparedness and disaster preparedness. And then the other one I wanted to be on was limited government. And so we kind kind of, you know, a lot of the platform, it wasn't actually too dramatic this year.
Yeah.
I know both of us have been to some in the past that have been much more dramatic, a lot of contention. That family plank seems to always kind of gather the most or garner the most attention.
Yeah.
We did in the limited government, we had a number of new people who were activated really for the first time based on the 2019 and how HB 3063,
the medical freedom moms.
Yeah. And so there was a strong contingent of medical freedom parents there, and they really did a great job. They made themselves heard in the platforms, and the one that I was on, limited government, we ended up putting in a statement about medical freedom and bodily autonomy. Mm-hmm. And there was some controversy on that. There was some controversy on the floor. For those who aren't familiar with it, you basically spend the first day after lunch kind of going through in your caucus. So you're in a caucus, you're in a room with people that are, you know, have a particular affinity for the plank you're working on. We have everything from veterans to immigration. It's a very
national security
big document, which I would actually like to see shrink even further. I would like one sentence. Limited government is better government. We're good. Let's go home.
Everybody wants to shrink the platform, but then
grows.
Well, but no, but the problem is, though, then if you say, okay, what actually do you want to cut? And then you're going after someone's sacred cow. So, I mean, everything that's been in there has been thoroughly argued over and everything. So I'm kind of happy with the size of it. That's fine. And if somebody wanted to summarize it and make a little smaller one, I'd be happy with that too. But I think the document that we came out of is appropriate.
It's a good document. You know, I have no issues with it. Especially in the emergency preparedness one, I think the last platform convention, it was brand new at that time. So it was a little weedy. So we cleaned it up and tightened it up really nicely, worked on the preambles and different things like that. It is very much wordsmithing.
Yeah.
I mean, words really do matter. So adding the medical freedom, the bodily autonomy part got some pushback on the floor. So, okay, after the day of caucusing where you kind of craft it, you basically use track changes in Word and you get everything in there and everyone has their say, and then it goes to the full body, and then it's, you know, basically an up or down vote, but there's some discussion. And so bodily autonomy was an interesting one, because there were some in the group that felt that that word had been co-opted by the left, incorrectly defined, and myself and some others were arguing, actually, we are using it in its correct form. It's time to take the word back.
Yep.
We need to stop ceding language to the left, which we do all too often.
Yeah,
it's like,
we do.
Take it back. It's not even accurately defined the way they're using it. We're using it correctly. So I was really happy to see a whole lot of new people involved that had run to be delegates, really coming in and getting out and getting involved. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and that the fact that was the kind of the major change in the platform was the medical freedom part. Yeah. And I think that that was so important that that's going to be an issue. It was an issue, big issue in the last legislative session, and it will be in sessions to come. And so that was such a huge thing. So I'm so glad that we put that in the platform and decided to embrace that as a party. So I'm really proud of my party for putting that.
I am too. I was too. And I was really proud of mostly it was women that I was working for, moms that I was working with in that, and their passion and dedication and the fact that they understand that in order to affect change, they need to get inside the process and make it from that, from that regard. And they don't, instead of, you know, sort of poo-pooing it or denigrating it, come in and help and work.
This is where getting involved pays off.
And I think it'll pay off for them. And I saw just sort of the not the fallout, but the reception that when it was sort of everyone was sharing it on social media, there was a lot of glee and joy that this had been added and gratefulness that it had been put in the platform.
Yep.
So, you know, as a Republican elected representative, what does the platform mean to you?
So I come from the party and everything, and I was a former party chair, so I'm county party chair, so I love the Republican Party, and it's not everybody in the House caucus is as tied to the Republican Party as they could be. So I don't know, I think that everybody at least looks at it as this is what the grassroots thinks.
Yeah.
And so and not everybody believes everything that's in the platform there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to talk to the grassroots, and if you want to inspire the grassroots, and if you want to have a following within the grassroots, that the platform is the place to start there. So the ideas that are in there.
The grassroots, I mean, that really is, that's the rank and file, that's everybody who's putting in, that's everybody who's volunteering at the fair, at the booth, that's people that are working on the recall, that are gathering signatures, that volunteer at the offices, that knock doors for candidates. Sometimes there is a feeling that they are somewhat dismissed.
Yep, and it's too bad, too. Those are people that are influential in the community.
Yeah.
They're not your $10,000 donors or anything like that, but they're the people that talk to their sewing circle or their basketball team or whatever, and or their hockey team, and to let people know what's going on, and people look up to them as a source of information. So I think that's... you would ignore that grassroots element of the party at your peril.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And and I'm hoping that will change. I kind of have that sense that maybe it is changing, because what I'm watching is from Marion County, because that's where I'm from. I mean, the level of dedication and the people that are spending their time in the summer and precious family time to be out there and to do the hard work,
mm-hmm.
really needs to be celebrated and applauded.
People are using that for their vacation. Yeah,
exactly.
It's serious.
And any one of us who's been involved in politics for a long time, most of your vacation goes towards political.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think I've had a real vacation in a long time. We're good. Okay, because I wanted to hit on a couple of things. There was actually an article that came out from the Gay Republican. I like that, breaking all stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yes, yes. This article basically talked about two of the planks with the law and criminal justice platform, and then the family and education. And the statement that was added that sort of got this writer's attention was, "We believe in freedom of speech and oppose all hate speech laws." Now, that is interesting. I think somebody made the comment in here, one person's hate speech is the other person's truth, realistically, or it's mm-hmm. the truth. So do you think, by the Republicans kind of, I think it comes out where it's timely issues, things that are in the news, things that are important, do get embedded into the platform.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is an important addition to the platform?
Yeah, this is huge. I mean, and it's kind of a sad commentary that we'd have to put something like this in our thing, that we have our government evaluating our intent and...
it's scary. That's frightening.
On something as simple as speech. So it is. It's kind of frightening. So I'm glad that we put that in there. I'm glad that I'm not glad that we have to think about these things,
right.
but it's good that we recognize that this is an issue.
It needs to be reinforced. I mean, hate speech, the speech that you hate is the very speech that needs the most protection.
Probably. Yeah.
And the
easy stuff to say doesn't, we don't need to protect that.
We don't.
So easy, so.
And unfortunately, I'm seeing in mm-hmm. a certain, age demographic where, of course I'm for free speech, but not mean speech, not hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets to define that? And that's the slippery, scary slope.
What we're saying right now could be considered hate speech by someone else.
Yeah. And I get so upset at the use of the word hate. The people that are throwing that word around are the people who are really viscerally upset
mm-hmm.
and to the point of, I don't know, hate.
What,
and so it's kind of interesting. I mean, I don't go around all foaming at the mouth telling people to shut up or anything like that. So I'm not a producer of hate speech, I think. So.
I know, but it tends to be hate speech is just speech that you disagree with, unfortunately.
Yep. How about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm glad for that we did that. The family and education plank also put something in there. And I'll just read what was added. There are only two sexes, male and female, based on a person's biological sex at birth. We oppose unassigned gender identity at birth. We encourage the natural expression of these genders, masculine and feminine. We affirm that both are valuable in the raising of children. Again, to me, that 10-15 years ago would have been, thanks, Captain Obvious.
Yeah.
Right.
But now here we are, where we have to put something like this in here. And again, this is reaffirming the family. Mother and father are equally important. They have different roles.
It's important to affirm that. And I get it that not everybody is born healthy or and people have different I don't know how to characterize it, different issues or whatever, and we need to take care to meet the needs of those people or whatever, but that doesn't say that we pave over the institutions of society that are necessary for a good healthy society, whatever, to bring up children and
optimal if you can have it and you is mom and dad in an intact marriage and in the home.
Yep.
And there are other iterations of that, and that's fine, but that really is the model.
Yeah, the family unit.
Right.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be embarrassed to say that, and then we don't always live up to that ideal, but then we do the best we can with what we're given. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah, right, mm-hmm. exactly, and all of that. I mean, challenges growing up. I know I can speak to them well. One last thing too that this article from Gay Republican talked about was adding a new plank in the education platform. No person shall be forced or allowed to share a restroom, locker room, or shower with a person of the opposite biological sex. Attempts shall be made to provide appropriate facilities for all individuals. Again, another one. You'd think that 10 or 15 years ago we would really, but we do have. I mean, there was a case in Dallas.
Yeah,
I think that's still in litigation?
Going on in Dallas.
Yeah,
and it's incredible to me that that we've come to a point in society where in order for me to be fulfilled and to be happy, the law has to require someone else to get naked in front of me. That just doesn't, that doesn't compute with me. That what a egregious violation of freedom that is. You know, and especially, you know, I remember back in the days when I was in junior high school or high school or whatever, something like that, and, you know, I had zits and I liked girls, but I was afraid of girls and, you know, whatever, all that kind of...
I would have been junior high, probably.
Well, yeah, yeah, you know, all that kind of stuff was going on, and just how devastating that would have been to me to put me in that, you know. Right now, I'm an old guy, I don't care, you know, but just, that's just so, that would have been so demeaning to my freedom as a person and my development. So,
and I understand wanting to make the person at issue, in, like in the Dallas case, you know, comfortable and feel safe and feel okay and not, mm-hmm. not single them out or whatever. But you have to remember, what about all the other children that are, we're talking, all of these are children.
Yeah. Right.
And we have to look out for the other children as well. And
absolutely.
So there has to be, and I think finding, you know, the proper accommodations, whatever it be, I think there has to be a little give and take on the side of the, I think it's the plaintiff in this case,
yeah.
but a little bit more give and take on that. If reasonable accommodations are made, what more can you do
yep.
versus sort of violating the rights of every other child?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
everybody else has them too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you do. So, so there was some interesting, you know, some good stuff, thoughtful, very, very thoughtful, very timely, added to the Republican Party platform. So it was a good process. I'm glad I was there. I'm glad you were there.
Yep.
We are going to take another quick break before we wrap up. So once again, you're listening to Wednesdays with Denise on the Newsmakers program on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers proudly brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape.
We are back for our final segment with the one and only Mike Nierman.
He is the one and only.
There's no one else like him in the world. Mm-hmm. We love having him
and
on
And thank
here.
God for that.
Thanks for having me on.
You betcha.
So, Dave, because you were at the fair, and so you did have a question, and I thought it was a good question. I want to kind of wrap up back over to what Mike's role is over at the Freedom Foundation. But we were talking about door knockers, and so, mm-hmm. yeah, so...
Well, you were talking about how you were driving around and you were knocking on doors and informing people that they didn't need to be in the union and how they could opt out. And you were telling them that it was basically giving themselves a raise if they opted out. Mm-hmm. What kind of reaction, facial expressions were you getting? Did you see the light bulbs come on, that yeah. kind of thing?
So that's an interesting question. That's our number one kind of, what do you want to say, our number one selling point mm-hmm. is the fact that you can give yourself a raise.
Yeah.
That, you know, for a lot of people, several hundred to $1,000 is a lot of money a year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would appreciate that myself. But,
I would.
You know what? I think a lot of it we get is disbelief. So we don't get a lot of people that actually opt out right at the door because I think people kind of don't believe it. That's a lot of money for doing essentially nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it kind of almost sounds like a scam, right?
But they're like my union is, I pay those dues. They represent me. They help me.
They must do something.
Right.
And they must do something. Yeah. So what is,
they do what, something. What, they spend it on politics. Is what they do. But,
right.
But so, and you don't have to do that. So you can keep the money, but we do get, we do get some eye popping people. I was knocking doors the other day and, there was it was two doors in a row. So it's kind of weird, but there are people like, no, I love my union. I want to stay in my union or whatever. And that's fine, too, because mm-hmm. I believe in freedom.
Absolutely.
And if you want to give your money to a union to forward some political causes, you ought to have the right to do that. So I believe in freedom of association. So I'm fine with that. But
Freedom Foundation believes in freedom.
Yeah. How about that?
Funny. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's a light bulb moment there.
So we check them off and move on to the next one there.
Because right.
there's enough people that are willing to opt out just to get the money.
So that's good to know. You're talking to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes in political campaigns, you target who you talk to. You want 4-4s. You want people that have actively vote. But you guys talk to everybody.
Yep, we do. We go
so you run the risk of having people slam the door in your face.
The shop steward or whatever who's a drinking the Kool-Aid union guy or whatever. We'll talk to him too. So, you know, one of the things is we run into people people that, so the union will ask people to make an extra political contribution on top of their union dues. And some people do that.
Uh-huh.
And we talk to those people. And the funny thing is some of those people opt out. And because I think that I don't know this for sure, but I think some of them get kind of pressured into making that extra little contribution. For the price of a cup of coffee, you can, you know, whatever.
Often and, do we hear that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you can promote justice and truth and the American way or whatever. And so how do you want to check out this little box for $20 a month or something like that? We get those people and they even opt out. And so then that money stops going to the union too.
Wow.
Just have it automatically taken from your paycheck. You won't feel it.
Yeah.
It's basically what they're saying,
yep.
right?
And it gets automatically taken from their paycheck.
Yes, it does.
That's another little project we got down the road there.
Uh-huh.
Again, I come back to it should be opt-in and it should be a much more proactive rather than sort of this passive where it just happens to you. You should have to say, yes, I want to do this.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be nice if it was just another bill that you had to pay? Like my employer doesn't take my car payment out or doesn't pay my electric bill for me. And so
it'd be nice if they did, though.
I don't think so. No,
if they paid it for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. But
that was my point.
Yeah. And didn't deduct that from my wages. Right. Yeah. That's what your point is.
Yes.
But in this case, it would be nice if people really, if they wanted to be a membership of an organization, if they joined that organization and paid dues to that organization on their own.
So, my gosh, is there ever a chance of any kind of legislation coming through that might change that? Although I don't know what the political climate in the state, how far
So certainly not legislation in Oregon's not going to go, but we like our chances in the courts on that one. So mm-hmm. we'll see. And then we also had the initiative process in Oregon.
Yeah.
That very thing failed 51-49 in Oregon. So that very question was put on the ballot, I think, in 2009. And so we may have another crack at that.
They fought pretty hard on that one.
Oh yeah, that cost them a lot to do that because you know, again, this is the government performing a function that government shouldn't really perform.
Correct.
Is being a collection agency for a third party organization.
Yeah.
So the government doesn't do collections if I don't pay my car payment, the government's not going to go down to Toyota and collect the money or take my car payment out of my paycheck or anything like that for mm-hmm. them. So they shouldn't do that for unions either.
Yeah, right.
And then even just public sector unions in and of themselves. I mean, it's sort of this funding circle that I mean, even FDR didn't like them and didn't want them.
Yeah, the vicious circle where the unions are representing the workers there, and then the unions are giving money to the politicians, and the politicians are then giving money to the workers. It goes to the union
and it just goes round and round.
And then the negotiating table is comical because they're negotiating with themselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, I mean, I don't know if there's an appetite for even just completely doing away with that. I'm sure that would be met with massive pushback.
I thought there was a third party that came in and helped negotiate with them. Well, they don't do that?
So sometimes they'll have attorneys at the table.
So here's another thing, too, and I kind of fought this in the legislature, is we have the Employee Relations Board, which mm-hmm. is a state agency, mm-hmm. and they do the mediation on the negotiations like that.
Yeah.
So, but that's paid for by the taxpayers. Yeah. So you pay for that, Denise.
Yes.
You pay for the mediation on that.
I'm well aware of that. Uh-huh. Yeah. Not happy about it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting how that works.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of ins and outs and nuts and bolts to this. So I would encourage people who have been listening to this conversation who want to learn more, who maybe want to opt out, maybe just want some more information, maybe want to talk to you, meet you, buy you a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
What's Freedom Foundation's website?
So freedomfoundation.com. And if you want to opt out, it's optouttoday.com.
Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure having you here. Always good to talk to you. We probably could have gone for another hour on this one, too. There's so much to talk about.
There is a lot. I learned a lot again today.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
the Freedom Foundation. We've had him on several times, but an eye-opener every time.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we round out today, it's hot out there in case anybody hasn't noticed. And so there's a really great article in the Salem Reporter about, you know the difference between heat stroke and heat exhaustion. Know the difference. Stay hydrated. Keep cool. Sit in front of your air conditioner with a nice glass of lemonade and stay cool.
And thanks for joining us on Newsmakers Wednesdays with Denise. I'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.